Iowa Farm Bureau President Craig Lyne.
Good morning. And, well, thank you. Yeah, we do that at church, too. We say good morning. If it doesn't work out, we try it again. Good morning. That's better. Welcome to the 91st Annual Meeting of the Iowa Farm Bureau. Yesterday, last night, and this morning, it was a true pleasure to visit with so many who have served our mission with distinction over the years. What we've accomplished over the past 91 years would not have been possible without a solid foundation, one painstakingly laid by generations of farmers. So much of that hard work was done by men and women who believed in our policies and cause, never seeking attention or looking for their names to be enshrined. This meeting should be one of celebration. So today, let us express our gratitude, and I want to express my gratitude and appreciation to all of you. You are truly the bedrock of agriculture. This has been a horrendous year for some, and for many, the going may be somewhat rough at this moment. But let no one doubt our resolve. My message to you today is, be of good cheer. Our time is right now to provide a desirable and successful blueprint for the future, for our farmers and their communities. There is gold in them hills, and Iowa is a mother lode. This point in history, poised on the brink of success or failure, reminds me of a story of R.U. Darby. Darby was a miner during the California Gold Rush who had a driving passion to make it rich by mining for gold. For a short time, his passion was realized because he struck gold, but he had not fully understood the topography of the site. After his initial site stopped yielding and repeated attempts to find more gold failed, he decided it was best to cut his losses and return home. So he sold his claim to a local junk dealer for $100. The local junk dealer who bought the claim understood the mechanics of mining. He had studied geology and had hired an engineer to scout the terrain. Armed with knowledge, this new owner dug only 3 feet from the site where Darby stopped digging before striking one of the richest veins of gold in history. Have we surveyed the landscape lately, and do we truly understand the value of digging a little deeper by reaching out to modern consumers? Are we listening to their needs and taking them to heart to create the opportunity for our future? Have we fully valued our topography by utilizing the skills of husbandry and plant physiology to create more opportunity? Or have we fallen victim to the times of doom and gloom? I'm glad I didn't hear much gloom and doom yesterday, because I believe we are looking at the future, because now is the right time for us to be laying the groundwork for our children and grandchildren, not driving a stake into the heart of the future because of the failure of a single claim, a bad year, or a failed crop. Will we make the decisions right now to guarantee they have the options we did not? Tension and anxiety is high, not just for our farmers, but for all Americans. It seems that Washington is living in a world far removed from farm country. Our federal and state governments are on the verge of bankruptcy, and corrections are not being made quick enough to alter this disastrous path. Now, I believe we can all learn a lesson from the recent demise of one of America's finest, General Motors. For nearly 100 years, this corporation dominated the world business scene. They were the model of excellence in management and development. If you're my age, you know what a 57 Chevy really meant. It exemplified power, prestige, and if you were lucky, a date. General Motors navigated through the Great Depression and negotiated the transition from producing tanks and other military machines during World War II to peacetime production of cars and trucks. Some say it was global before global was cool. By the mid-1950s, the company was a symbol of American industrial power. It owned more than half the U.S. market and employed more people globally than any other company. It was the trendsetter in styling and technology, and even when it wasn't, it held its competitors at bay. Everyone seemed to want to see the USA in a Chevrolet. GM held the distinction as the world's largest automaker until just recently. How does such a giant tumble when they seem to have so much going for them? Obviously, their downfall was years in the making, and we in the breadbasket of the world need to heed GM's demise. First, Detroit underestimated their competition in more ways than one. They mismanaged their relationship with their employees. They seemed to handle failure better than success. When they made money, they tended to squander it on ill-conceived diversification schemes. And we all know they relied heavily on gas-hungry truck and SUV lines and didn't stay competitive in other consumer-desired vehicles. They refused to accept to survive. They could not remain what they had been, a company with multiple brands and a dominant market share. Instead, General Motors used short-term strategies such as 0% financing to avoid reckoning the consequences of globalization and its own mistakes. And finally, GM spent millions in Washington and Detroit on expensive lawyers, lobbyists, and political campaigns to convince lawmakers they knew consumers best. Does this sound strangely familiar? Peter Cohen, businessman and professor of management at Babson College, wrote, and I quote, "GM's failure after 101 years is an indictment of American management in general. It highlights the damage to our economy that results when finance becomes the tail that wags the economic dog. And it shows what happens to any company that rests on its laurels and fails to adapt to change. Make no mistake, what has happened to GM is an extraordinary event in political and economic history of our country. And make no mistake, what happened to GM can happen to us, as in any business, if our farming industry fails to recognize our true strength of innovation and our needs to adapt to customer preferences. If we don't, we may not leave a proud legacy for our children. We must succeed, and we will succeed, when we combine our knowledge, innovation, and adaptation to add more value to everything we grow. How? Iowa can be a comprehensive arrangement of biodiversity based upon our agriculture heritage. After all, we are the most affordable food providers for the world. We rank number one in the top 10 in almost everything we grow in Iowa. From the kids and the grandkids we cherish to the record-yielding corn crops we nurture. By almost any standing, we are the greatest. When it comes to my granddaughter, she is the greatest. We have some of the richest soils in the world, and we the people have innovative and entrepreneurial spirit, and most importantly, we have young, energetic men and women looking for ways to combine what they know with what they grow. And if you feel young today, raise your hand. Is this a time for us to consider moving ahead independently of government and decide if our future should be one of innovation, adaptation, and biodiversity? We can direct our bioeconomic future, but only if we are open to surveying the landscape. We are only a few feet from gold. And the proof is these golden agriculture successes. Kemen Industry, a Des Moines-based company started by a livestock farmer, is now a global enterprise, creating ingredients in everything from livestock and pet feed to consumer supplements. Recently, they dramatically increased their sales by surveying the landscape. Knowing Americans now spend in excess of $41 billion per year on their pets provided Kemen with a valuable new market. Asoya, another Iowa company, uses low linolenic soybean oil made from Midwest-grown soybeans for healthy baking. It's also sold to Kentucky Fried Chicken franchises all across America. They understood the health and nutrition trends shaping consumers. It even gets better. The hand sanitizers you use today may have come from an ethanol plant, leveraging consumer trends in health and safety. And so often we think of ethanol as energy, but the fact is an important market for ethanol is an industrial application in solvents. Solvents are primarily used in the production of paints, coatings, pharmaceuticals, adhesive inks, and products, and it even gets better when it's in a bottle. How about a beverage? A beverage from that would be a top shelf vodka, yet another added value for the product of corn. Did you know that Estee Lauder fragrances use an emulsifier from soybeans grown in Cherokee, Iowa? Or did you know that a cure for cystic fibrosis may come from the University of Iowa and Transova, an Iowa company, thanks to groundbreaking research with pigs? And this list goes on and on. The key point I'm making is this. These successes came to these businesses because they surveyed the landscape. They understood their customer and added value to their businesses based on those trends. Iowa can be so much more than a commodity-driven economy. We shouldn't be satisfied with only food, fiber, and energy from our soils. We must reach into the creative minds of our farmers and universities, Wendy, our universities, there you are, to create a living economy, one that is renewed, not mined, and harvested from a shrinking global supply. Iowa's future is in capturing the renewable value of the sun, the soil, and the rain that falls freely from the skies. Combining these resources with a strong and growing livestock and poultry industry will add millions to our rural communities now in search of new revenue. The gold in Iowa's landscape is a renewable, starch-based economy grown on Iowa soil, nurtured by Iowans and their innovative spirit. We are farmers and innovators. In 2010, let us celebrate our shared values with consumers and the common purpose that has given us a legacy of originality. Unlike our opponents, who find their glee in spreading fear and misinformation, let's nourish our strength of purpose from a commitment of ideals that bond us: compassion, faith, family, hard work. No one lived this more than Iowa farmer Norman Borlaug. Because of him and those like him, we are proof that the powerful combination of innovation and values like compassion can feed another 1 billion hungry people. Who would have thought back in 1950, a year before I was born, when each farmer fed 25 people, that we would feed as many as we do today. By surveying the land and combining what we know with what we grow, modern feeding practices and efficient feed additives enable today's cattle growers to use 2/3 less land to produce a pound of beef than all natural fed beef. Dairy people, my family, can now produce 58% more milk with 64% fewer dairy cows than we did following World War II. Researchers have found that a nationwide approved feed additive for the swine industry can enable the U.S. to maintain current levels of pork production with 11 million fewer hogs. This would reduce crop ground needed for feed by more than 2 million acres. And this one I really like, is because we're in the business to feed the world, and acre of soybeans can now provide 42,000 8-ounce glasses of soy milk to protein-starved children in Asia and Africa. Now, a chicken sandwich is your choice. The broiler industry now enjoys a 4- to 6-fold increase in harvest weights of chickens over the past few decades. Now is the time to provide leadership for a growing world population, and now is the time for us to listen carefully to consumers worldwide and define a path for entrepreneurs to add value to our resources. We should ask, what would Norman do? A bioeconomy-driven Iowa is our legacy, and the moment starts today with you, our Farm Bureau members. A starch-based bioeconomy based on everything we grow is our vein of gold. Our state can be a haven for investment and job opportunity. Why should we be satisfied with anything less than adding the most possible net income and excitement to farm country? Why shouldn't we look for ways to thrive with less government involvement? Our future is now, and you, Farm Bureau leaders, Farm Bureau is leading the way. Now, I thought about this for quite some time. Those of you assembled here today belong to Farm Bureau because you know we can create change. You believe this organization achieves results. Yesterday, I talked to an 89-year-old young leader who said, "We have been for years and years." We were instrumental in helping the biofuel industry grow. Enough said. We spearheaded outreach meetings to launch the wind industry in Iowa, providing farmers with risk assessments, propelling Iowa to number 2 in the nation in wind energy. We celebrate our livestock and poultry growers. That's why we created the Coalition to Support Iowa Farmers and invited the ag community to join forces to strengthen this important industry, a model that other states have since emulated. We created an entrepreneurial program, Renew Rural Iowa, to help breathe new life and strengthen our rural communities, also a model other states now follow. Daily, we identify unique and appropriate ways to reach out to consumers on their level about Farm Bureau policies and modern farming. We actively pursue numerous social networking tools, and we've established campaigns like Wholesome Food, Wholesome Families. We engage our members through a number of record Speaker Corps activities. And how many of you are Speaker Corps members here? Okay, a number of you. I'm guessing there's a lot out working today. And our TV program, Iowa Minute, reaches more than 1 million households each week. It's no secret, at the Capitol, the Farm Bureau members lead the way on critical farm policy issues like animal identification, food safety, and don't cap our future. On that subject, climate change, Yesterday, our members heard how we feel about it, but I'd like to add a few more things. A few may believe this is an issue that farmers should gladly and freely support. But they are not individuals responding to a grassroots examination like Farm Bureau does, nor do these folks rely on farming to put their kids through college or pay their health care bills. These are only a few examples of why you are engaged in Farm Bureau leadership. In 2010, the plate widens to include more innovative programming outreach to help farmers prosper and to help build trust with the consumers. And we really are looking forward to telling you more about those efforts as they draw near. Why does this formula work? This grassroots formula for 91 years, why does it work? Because the Iowa Farm Bureau is more than a sum of its parts. Out of many, we are truly one. While other organizations choose a top-down approach for over 9 decades, Farm Bureau has succeeded and thrived as truly a grassroots organization. So how do we shape the future? How do we provide the pathway to goal? We decide that technology, innovation, adaptation, and cooperation are essential. Your leadership is needed to get us there. It is up to each of us to decide now if our future will be a bright one, if our agriculture legacy will endure, if our cause remains focused on our values. What would Norman say? He would say, "Bravo, carry on." Together, we can achieve the unimaginable. The creative talents of our farmers, like Norman Borlaug, are being magnified by state-of-the-art technology that boggles my mind. And this technology is put to work for our benefits as never before. Yes, I understand and I know it has been a tough year for many, but we have every reason to be optimistic. And for this Iowa farmer, we are standing just 3 feet from gold. Thank you for all that you do, and God bless.